It's a Monday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, Hassan Whiteside's frustration over minutes seems to be boiling over. We'll talk about if his recent comments will impact his future with the team.
And we'll talk about how the Heat should approach Whiteside's minutes for the rest of the season and the playoffs. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Amillo, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllIncanHeat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DavidAmillo13.
We've got trouble in paradise, David. Hassan Whiteside, after sitting out the fourth quarter and overtime in Miami's loss to the Brooklyn Nets on Saturday, went on a rant to the media about how he's not being used enough, saying, and I'm going to quote him here, "A lot of teams don't have a good center. They are going to use their strengths. It's bull blank. It's really bull blank, man. There are a lot of teams that can use the center." Then, when asked if the situation has caused him to think about his future in Miami, he said, and I quote, "I don't know. Maybe." Now, Spoelstra is trying to sweep it under the rug. Spo said at the Heat's practice Monday morning that Whiteside used, quote, "poor judgment, poor timing" with his comments, and, quote, "we're here to help Hassan be a better leader, better professional, and that he's still one of our brothers." So now that we're up to date on the situation, David, do you think that Whiteside's comments will have an impact on his future with the Heat?
No, because Whiteside doesn't have an impact on this team whatsoever. So honestly, I don't think that anybody's going to take him too seriously. Maybe he's frustrated, but I think everybody around him kind of understands that he's not intelligent enough to really understand his situation, nor does he know how to approach it correctly. So to be honest with you, I think he's a non-factor and his comments are just a bunch of bullcrap.
To use Whiteside's words against him.
Yes, a little bit about it. I mean, look, it's ridiculous. Like this is like listening to Charles Barkley rail against analytics. It's like you have no idea what you're talking about. The reason you're not out on the floor is because you will get roasted alive defensively. Like his perspective is that the Brooklyn Nets rolled out this small lineup where Jared Allen wasn't on the floor anymore, and they had Rondae Hollis Jefferson out there or Quincy Acey at the center position. And that the Heat should have taken advantage of that by putting Whiteside out there. Well, that's fine. And maybe Whiteside would be able to get those points in the low post against a guy like Acey or Hollis Jefferson. But that's not necessarily a guarantee. Hassan has not necessarily been able to finish at the rim at a high rate. No matter who's guarding, whether it's a smaller player like Acey or Rondae Jefferson, yeah, or anybody. So, and even if that's the case, maybe you'll get 2 points at the rim, but you'll probably be giving up three along the perimeter because those guys can all shoot from the perimeter. James Johnson, who's much more versatile, gave up a bunch of points to Rondae Jefferson, and Quincy Acey knocked down a three-pointer being guarded by our best defender, Justice Winslow. So to be honest with you, having him out there is much more of a liability. He just doesn't understand that. And the problem was that he's watching this game play out. He's seeing this small lineup out there, and he thinks to himself, you know, I could really go in there and beat these guys up for a quick 2 points, even though we're giving up 3 points very easily along the perimeter. Like that fundamental lack of understanding about the basic of arithmetic of the NBA is frustrating to watch.
So. You know, and that's the trend right now in the NBA, right? Is that these guys, it's not just Whiteside. Players like Whiteside, your traditional 7-footer rim protectors who are, you know, slower and prefer to get the ball in the post, they're being played fewer minutes. And Whiteside seems to be taking it personally where, look, is he right that there aren't a lot of guys with a skill set in the league? Yeah, you know, but what are they going to – what should the Heat – right, for good reason. And what are the Heat going to do? Post him up? And this kind of goes back to this theme that we've talked about Whiteside throughout his entire Heat career, really, is that he thinks that getting him – he thinks that a Whiteside post-up – is an efficient and good offensive option. And it's just proven year after year that it's just not. And even at compare him to other post-up players like the elite ones, like LaMarcus Aldridge and Joel Embiid, he's not even in their league. I mean, he's not an efficient post-up player. And the post-up play is not an efficient shot to begin with. So it makes sense that the Heat have moved further away from that as they've continued to go small. They didn't not only play Whiteside at center. They didn't play Bam, and they didn't play Kelly at center to end the game. They played James Johnson at center. They went super small. So you could look at Whiteside and say, look, man, it's not you. We didn't play any of our centers. We needed to go small there. And this is all – I mean, this doesn't even consider the fact that Whiteside has to come out after 4 minutes of playing after his injury. He only played 20 minutes of the game. He's coming back. Right. Maybe he was on a minutes restriction, and he did say that, but he also wanted to be out there at the end. And, look, you want guys to want to be out there at the end, but you don't want them to go to the media and start complaining about it. Now, I will say the media did seem to bait him. They knew that he was frustrated.
Specifically.
I suppose. I'm not sure who asked it, but I think they baited him a little bit. But still, if you're Whiteside, you got to keep your composure a little bit. And to go back to Eric Spoelstra's comments, I'm not going to read too much into them. What else is he supposed to say after a Heat practice? After this has been a story all weekend, you know, he is just trying to sweep it under the rug. And he's probably just thinking, let's get through the regular season. Let's get to the playoffs. And then we're probably going to deal with this over the summer.
That's fair. I mean, look, you've both been in media scrums after games. You ask a question where you kind of hope that you'll get a good answer from, not necessarily one looking to incite a player who's probably going to be frustrated. It comes after a loss. If Miami had found a way to win that game against the Nets, maybe he wouldn't have been so vocal about it.
Right. This didn't come out of nowhere, right? This has been something that's he's talked about his frustration with minutes all season long and after they've won.
But not like this.
But not like this, right? Not like this.
Not yet. To call out, to say that he doesn't know what his future with the team is. To say, well, first of all, to refer to himself in the third person as one of the best centers in the league. To openly call it BS. All those different things make this a unique situation, unlike any of the other times where he's complained or been frustrated, voiced some frustration about his playing time. Look, I mean, like you pointed out, none of the other centers played there at that point in time, and they wouldn't have been a good fit. I mean, even Olynyk would have been a better fit out there because of his long-range shooting, because of his versatility as a defender, and he wasn't out there. So, you know, Bam is capable of being a good defender out there, but he doesn't have the three-point shooting that James Johnson brings or the ability to put the ball down the floor and create offense for others. So that's why he wasn't playing. You know, it's just we keep trying to make excuses for Whiteside. We keep hoping that he'll figure it out, that he win enough games or he gets hurt and then he winds up not being a factor. And then he goes and says something stupid like this. I don't know that the rest of the team probably think of him as some big, stupid, spoiled child. And that's how he's acting. He's not doing anything to refute that kind of opinion of him. So I don't think that they take him too seriously. They've got Dwayne Wade back. They've got enough leadership there with everybody else. Like, he's never understood what it takes to be a leader. He doesn't lead by example. He doesn't lead the right way. He doesn't know how to fit in the right way. And so that's a problem. And I think everybody else is just going to tune him out. They probably won't feed him the ball. And if he is looking for opportunities to prove that he's worth it or he's worth his contract or that he can earn those kinds of minutes at the end, I don't think he's going to get them. So maybe he winds up hurting the team more in the long run, but maybe Spoelstra has just enough wherewithal to say, you know what, the team's probably better not playing Whiteside anyway. Like, ideally, this team would be at its best if you have Hassan Whiteside out there providing great rim protection, et cetera. But maybe he just says, you know what, we'll sacrifice. We'll make that take that risk by not having Whiteside out there, knowing that we don't have to worry about who's sharing the ball, who's getting touches, et cetera.
Well, let's talk about that next, with what the Heat should do. They've got 5 games left in the schedule. What should they do with Hassan Whiteside? We're going to get to that next. But first, a quick reminder to subscribe to Locked On NBA. It's the only daily NBA podcast that's less than 30 minutes long and delivers the most important news, scores, and storylines of the day. Perfect to listen to on your morning commute, while you're at the gym, or during your lunch break.
And make sure to listen on Tuesdays, when Wes and I will be hosting for the rest of the season. To get the latest episode every day, subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcasting app.
So the Heat have 5 more games left of the regular season, and then, of course, they're going to have, hopefully, they still haven't clinched yet, but the playoffs, they've basically clinched. They're not going to fall out of it. And Whiteside is still a part of this team, and they've got to figure out what they're going to do. Now, I don't think they're going to just bench Whiteside. I that's not going to go over well. I think that might be creating even more of a problem if you just don't sit him, or if you don't play him and you just sit him for the rest of the season. So he's going to play. He's going to continue to start, I imagine. And hopefully, look, Whiteside strikes me as the moody type. Maybe somebody who could kind of go in between attitudes pretty easily. So hopefully, you know, if you're the Heat, maybe you think, well, let's get Whiteside out there. maybe he has a big game and all of a sudden he's happy, and then we'll just deal with this headache over the offseason, which is really the only point, I think, is the only time that they could really start to deal with this situation. And maybe you start to try to trade him or something like that. And the beat reporters covering the Heat have mentioned that. Like, maybe at some point you try to trade him. But for now, they've got to use him because they are right now better when Whiteside is playing at his best, even if it is only for 25 or 26 minutes a game, right?
But that's no guarantee, right, that he'll play his best now that he's moody, right, and been chastised publicly in front. I mean, like a spoiled child, he might react. He might lash out yet again. He might sulk to that point where he's like, you know what? No one's feeding me the ball. I'm just not going to give maximum effort. Like as you and I have talked about many times, you know, the version of him that we saw against Joel Embiid a couple weeks ago where he was fully engaged is the best version of him. Willing to do the little things, the quote-unquote winning plays that lead to team success. And I don't know that we're going to get that version of him. So if he's going to go out there and sulk and be the most selfish, stupid version of himself that he can possibly be, why go out there and play him at all? I mean, if he's going to complain about minutes regardless, just sit his ass. I mean, I'll be 100% honest with you. Like, they'll probably start him, you're right, because that would probably create too much of a problem to have him come off the bench. This isn't the experiment of a couple seasons ago where he was coming off the bench because he was hurt and he had been suspended, et cetera. This isn't that.
Right.
This is, you know, you've got five games left against some pretty bad opponents. Well, the last two are against playoff opponents, but either way, you know, it's you've already assured yourself of a playoff spot. You're not going to change your rotation too much. You need him to go out there and play, I suppose. But at the same time,
I mean,
what are you going to get out of
him? The Heat elected to fine him and not suspend him, where if they even suspended him for one game, they could have gotten away with that. I think that would have been fine. You know, I think that would have been understandable. I think that would have played fine in the media. But they elected to just fine him.
Doesn't a suspension take away your salary? Like, if you're suspended, I think you don't earn your salary for that game that you're suspended. I can imagine Hassan.
Well, they still took money away from him by fining him, right? So I don't think that was necessary. But to my point, I guess, is they're going to play him, right? Like, that's the whole – like, if they didn't want to play him, they could have just suspended him for the rest of the season and be like, you know what? Stay in Miami. We're not dealing with you. Mm. But that tells me that they want to play him. So he's going to play Tuesday versus Atlanta, unless something happens between us recording this and then. I wonder if Udonis Haslem talked to him. Because that's not a conversation I'd want to have. I mean, I'm sure Haslam's been talking to him. If Haslam can't change his mind on this stuff, this whole thing has basically shown me, and this isn't news, but it really is just sort of coming to a head here, where Whiteside doesn't necessarily care about winning as much as he cares about his own production. And he just wants to be out there and play. And there's a fine line between a guy being competitive and thinking he can make a difference and just being naive and being a locker room issue, right? And there's, again, there's a fine line between that. You want a player who wants to be out there at the end of games, right? That's a positive thing that shows a competitiveness that you want from your elite guys, but then you don't want that to become a locker room issue. And I think that's where the Heat are at right now. And Whiteside is making it very clear that this is not a positive trait. This is going to be a negative trait, and it's going to be something that the Heat have to deal with. And credit Spoelstra. Like, this has been an issue all season long. He's still playing him fewer minutes. Now, my question, David, in the playoffs, where rotations tend to shorten there, and I still think the Heat are going to stick with about nine guys in their rotation in the playoffs. Do you continue to play Whiteside 26 minutes a game, or in the postseason, do you take minutes away from the bench guys and play Whiteside 30 minutes a game?
I don't know that those rotations of any opponent that they'd face, I don't know that those rotations would shorten to the point where we're having Whiteside out there in clutch situations at the end of the games is an advantage for Miami, which is the whole point of this situation, is that Whiteside doesn't understand what a disadvantage he creates by being out there. He is not – like, let's say you face – well, who are you going to face? The Celtics? Can he guard Horford along the perimeter? I mean, that's a bad matchup for Miami. That's a bad matchup for Whiteside.
I'll go back. Matt Moore, when he was on the show a few weeks ago, did mention, like, you're not ever going to beat Horford in terms of versatility or basketball IQ. The only way to beat Horford is just bludgeon him, right? Is just beat him physically. Right. And if there is a guy to do that, it's a guy like Whiteside and then guys like Joel Embiid who have been able to do that.
In the first three quarters of the game, not in the last five minutes of a close game.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Horford's going to be out there. Whiteside's not. It's probably going to be Kelly Olynyk.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So And then you're right. So look, I think we've talked about this a thousand times now. The best version of Whiteside, or the best way to implement Whiteside, 25 to 26 minutes a game, probably not at the end of games. And we've made the Toronto comparison a million times. Right. That's exactly what they do with Jonas Valanciunas. Now, if the game slows down in the playoffs, that tends to be more of a thing that just people say. I don't think is necessarily a reality as much as it used to be anymore. I think the games are still pretty high, are still higher in pace than they used to be. You know, I think the pace does tend to come down after the regular season, but the pace is at such a high level right now in today's league that it is still a relatively high pace compared to when players like Whiteside were still best used. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's still going to be a high pace for Whiteside, is what I'm saying. So I don't think anything's going to change. I think they're going to continue to start Whiteside. They're going to continue to play him the minutes that he's playing, and this team is going to continue to have his back for the rest of the season and the postseason, and just say, like, this is what it is. And during the offseason, they're going to deal with it. And we're going to talk about what dealing with it might look like next. But first, did you know that you could stream this podcast, Locked On Heat, on Spotify right now? It's easy. Open Spotify on your device or on your desktop, click on Browse, and then click on the podcast section, or just search for Locked On Heat. You can also stream the show on your smart speaker, such as Amazon Echo or Google Home. Now it's that much easier to stay up to date on the latest episodes of Locked On Heat, the only daily Miami Heat podcast. So I was in Sacramento, David, when the Heat were playing the Nets, and after they lost, and after Whiteside made those comments after the game, and I was talking to some people around the Kings organization, and I don't think that they would mind having Hassan Whiteside back. Good. So if we're looking for a new home for Hassan Whiteside, this is us assuming that the Heat go into this offseason trying to trade Hassan Whiteside, which I think you and I agree that is going to be the case. The Pat Riley will be getting on the phone and trying to move Hassan Whiteside this summer. Now, whether or not he can do that is a whole other situation. He's got he's finishing up his second year of a four-year, $98 million deal. He's making $25 million next year, $25.5 million next year, and then $27 million in a player option for the year after that. So a lot of money still left, but if they're able to move him, I think Sacramento makes sense. This is a team that has the second worst defense in the league and has had the worst defense in the league for most of the season. Phoenix, congratulations to them, recently took that mantle from them. A defensive rating of 109.5, which is very, very, very bad. They can't stop anybody going to the rim. And they have experimented with a lot of centers who haven't exactly worked out. You look at Papa Giannis, who they drafted in the lottery, and they released him this year in the middle of the season. They could use, and Willie Cauley-Stein hasn't panned out. They're not happy with him necessarily in his development. Kostas Koufos, who's kind of like a plug-and-play kind of guy, has a player option. He may or may not be back, and they're still looking to upgrade that position. They've got Harry Giles, who they drafted, but his injury situation is unknown, so you probably want somebody to play there. If there is a team out there that could play Whiteside 30 minutes a game and rely on him, it's a team like Sacramento. It's an interesting option.
It is. I mean, and most people assume, this is what we talked about around the trade deadline, that if a team was going to try to acquire Hassan, it was because he was going to fit a specific role on a potential title contender or a team that's just shy of being a legitimate contender, and then adding somebody like Whiteside who can defend on a high level makes a lot of sense. But for a team like Sacramento that's perpetually rebuilding, why not take a chance? Heck, they drafted him years ago anyway. It makes sense for them to try and reacquire him and plug in a rather glaring hole in their lineup. If they don't mind parting with some key players there, maybe a guy like Cauley-Stein or Koufos, who you mentioned before. I mean, those are good options to free up some space there and then bring in a guy that will instantly make that team a better team defensively anyway.
Yeah, and look, Whiteside left Sacramento not because they didn't like him, but because they just didn't have room for him. They liked him when he was there. I mean, again, I was talking to some of the beat reporters there. They liked Hassan Whiteside. He wasn't DeMarcus Cousins, and for that they liked him, you know, and I think he would be welcome back to that organization. It would be a good story for the Kings. Hey, look at this guy who we drafted, and we're bringing him back here. They could sort of spin it that way.
The front office that is with Sacramento now wasn't the one that drafted him, though, correct?
That's correct, but they could still spin it. But that's a good point. Like, they don't have any allegiances to Whiteside. But again, he fits a need there. He would improve that defense immediately, and I think Whiteside would be happy playing 30 minutes a game, and even if it was for a team like Sacramento. They would use him a lot. Maybe him and De'Aaron Fox could be a nice like 1-5 pick and roll combination. Oh, yeah. They might view it that way, but I don't think that would be the case because we know that Whiteside's not is an overrated rim roller. But again, he improves the defense immediately. Now, if you're looking for a trade in Miami for Miami, they can actually save some money in a deal because Sacramento's going to go into the season with some cap room, even more cap room again if Costa Cufos opts out. So the Heat could probably save about $8 or $9 million in cap space, which would be significant. That would make the difference between being $2 million short of the luxury tax apron to being about $11 or $12 million short of the luxury tax apron, which if you trade Whiteside means you might have enough room to bring back Wayne Ellington on a short, on a small contract. There are things that can happen here. And I guess what the trade would look like, it would be, you mentioned Willie Cauley-Stein, probably somebody like Willie Cauley-Stein, Justin Jackson, who the Heat were rumored to be interested in during the draft last year, who could play some small forward for them, nice shooter, good all-around basketball player, good passer, kind of that veteran college player out of UNC that we know Pat Riley likes. He likes those college vets. So you could do Justin Jackson, Willie Cauley-Stein in a second-round pick, and then maybe – and then you probably have to add another contract in there. Could be maybe the Amon Shumpert expiring contract at about $10 million, which a lot of people might be like, no. But look, a $10 million expiring contract has value in today's game. You can move that and package that with a couple of different parts to maybe make a move for another player. So it would be something. It would be something like that. It would have to be Shumpert, Cauley-Stein, and maybe Justin Jackson and a draft pick.
I don't even know at this point whether it's so much of an issue what you get in return for Whiteside, so much as what you're getting rid of. You know, the classic case of addition by subtraction. The fact that you could get a guy like Justin Jackson, who's young enough, who might be able to contribute some versatility, who you could kind of send down to Sioux Falls and give him the time to get the playing time he needs to fully develop. You know that this front office and this coaching staff is going to do whatever they can to help him put on some weight, which is obviously an issue for him. He needs to get stronger, a little bit more durable at the NBA level. So this team would be a much better team than whatever group he just left in Sacramento. And so they could afford to have him kind of take the time to develop, et cetera. And Miami has a much more proven track record of being able to do that than Sacramento does. So it makes a lot of sense. You know, they get something instantaneous that they could plug into their rotation and contribute right away. Miami gets long-term pieces that could grow and develop into something better in the future. You know, again, it makes a lot of sense. Again, I don't even know that Miami cares about what they'd get in return just so long as they can move on from the outside experiment.
You get a couple guys to fill out the bench, and then you're good, right? Yeah. And you look at a guy like Justin Jackson, like you said, Willie Cauley-Stein. Sacramento doesn't do the best job of player development.
No, they don't.
Those guys would probably take an immediate leap once they get to Miami, right? Absolutely. Even a guy like Willie Cauley-Stein, who's plateaued in his development a little bit, has some nice offensive skills, hasn't been the defensive player that he was expected to be coming out of Kentucky, but we know that Miami could probably work on changing that. Now, the other team I thought about, and we'll do this quickly, but the other team that I just said has the worst defense in the league, Phoenix, could really use a guy like Whiteside. They've drafted a number of centers and bigs who haven't necessarily worked out. They've got a couple of guys who project better as power forwards and stretch fours than they do it. Alex Len hasn't panned out for them. He might be gone. Tyson Chandler, a vet there, but they're moving away from vets and hasn't been the most effective player for them. And they've got a bunch of draft picks, David, coming up. And I don't know if you're Phoenix. You've got Devin Booker right now on a small contract. You want to maybe start surrounding him with more talent and try to start winning more games. They're projected right now to have the first pick in the draft. They're going to keep that. They're going to draft somebody, maybe a DeAndre Ayton or a Luka Doncic or something like that. But any of those guys could impact them right now. But let's say they don't draft one of the centers. Maybe they go with a wing like a Luka Doncic and they decide, hey, let's make a deal for Hassan Whiteside. They've got Miami's first round pick this year. And they've got Milwaukee's first-round pick this year. So they've got three first-round picks. So what if it's something like Tyson Chandler and like the 16th pick in the Milwaukee's first-round pick or Miami's first-round pick, bringing that back, or Jared Dudley in one of those picks or something like that could be an option.
That would be phenomenal for Miami getting a pick back in return. That seems really unlikely. But it also could happen based on what Phoenix's vision for next season is. Do they see themselves? Right. Look, they've been rebuilding for so long. Even when they were flirting with the playoffs a few seasons ago, when Dragic was still on the roster, they fell short. You know, do they have to make the playoffs now? Are they at that point now where the team is kind of losing their fan base because people are so frustrated of constantly having these young players in and out of their lineup, not knowing whether or not they're going to be any good. And,
you depends know, on who they hire for a coach too, right? Like what kind of...
Yes, good point. Yeah. There is... Well, you know, how about this? You know, they hire David Fizdale at coach. He has experience with Hassan Whiteside. They bring
and
in
and says, "I don't want anything to do with him."
Well, I mean, that's a potential option, though, right? I mean, maybe he feels that that would be, I can't see that, right? I couldn't see.
Right? There's no way. There's no way Fizdale would say, "I want that guy back."
Okay, so Jason Kidd goes to Phoenix. And he says he needs Hassan Whiteside.
Yeah. Yep. Even though he doesn't,
and Phoenix gets even worse somehow than they already are.
100%. I mean, if basically we're looking at one of the two worst run teams in the league for the last couple of years to pawn Whiteside off on, that's kind of where we're at right now. And that's all we have for today. We'll be back tomorrow with a mailbag. We got a big mailbag coming up. You could send mailbag questions for the next week and ask about advertising by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag #AskElohit and support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.